And that's one of the beauties of comedy, is you can talk about topics that are really, really heavy, and you can bring in lightness to them that allows us to all digest them together. It makes it more humanly relatable.
Welcome back to another episode of Influencer Business. I'm your host, Rich Scutellari. We hope you are doing well. We hope you're staying safe. We're certainly happy to have you with us here today. We have an awesome interview lined up for you. We're sitting down with Julie Nolke, the actor, writer, comedian, and YouTuber from Toronto, Canada. She has been creating for a long, long time, but actually went viral with a video in the early part of the pandemic and has been growing like crazy since. A really interesting story. She actually started out with a food blog and has morphed into a comedic sketch artist. So we're going to have some fun talking to Julie. But first, before we get to that, this episode is brought to you by ShopStyle Collective. If you're an influencer, you need to check them out. You can earn more with ShopStyle Collective, the most transparent influencer network in the business. Their easy-to-use platform powers your passion, giving you access to over 1,600 supported brands and retailers, sponsored campaign opportunities, actionable data insights, and tools that will help you succeed. Their cost per acquisition structure earns you a percentage of every single sale you drive. ShopStyle Collective offers a higher revenue per share than any other platform, and their transparent analytics allow you to know your earning potential upfront to make the right decisions for your content and your business. They have tools for every platform, your blog, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, all of them. So start monetizing your content today. Apply now at ShopStyleCollective.com. And if you're a brand or an agency, visit connect.shopstylecollective.com to learn more about how ShopStyle Collective can help your business drive scale as your full-service influencer marketing partner. ShopStyle, a wonderful company, big supporters of the podcast. Highly recommend that you go check them out. And if you like what you hear today on the podcast, please leave us that 5-star rating, give us that glowing review. It certainly helps, and we really do appreciate it. But with that out of the way, let's get to our conversation with Julie. Julie, thanks for joining us today on Influencer Business.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
Absolutely. Before we dive in, can you share a little bit about yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an actor, writer, YouTube creator based in Toronto, Canada. And I make videos on a weekly basis, and I act in film and TV.
That's awesome. So you started, we'll get to kind of your more recent endeavors soon, because you've done some amazing videos, particularly around the pandemic, and I loved Pandora's Box. But tell us a little bit about how you kind of started creating content, because didn't it start out as a blog?
Yeah. Oh, you went way back. Oh boy. Yeah. So, well, I'll go back earlier just to say that I went to university as an actor. I went to theater school, did 4 years of that. And upon graduating, I was super convinced that I was going to graduate and immediately be famous. You couldn't convince me otherwise. I thought I was going to get an agent and I was going to book all these jobs. And that's not the way it worked. And so I worked in the industry and I hustled and I just couldn't get a foot in anywhere. And so I was heartbroken. And so I decided that I was going to put all of that kind of pent up creative energy into something else just to keep me going, just so that I wasn't giving up. And so it did start as a food blog, actually, because I've always had a passion for cooking. And I started a blog with my husband, and he would take pictures and I would write recipes. And that's kind of how it all began.
That's incredible. And early in those early days, and maybe it's the same as it is today, what kind of jobs were you looking for vis-a-vis like the acting side of things?
I was doing a lot of auditioning for theater. I was booking the odd commercial, you know, they call it the bite and smile, where you go into an audition room, you take a bite of a cracker, and then you smile. I couldn't book them for the life of me, but I still went to audition for a lot of those. I worked as a bartender for many of those years just to pay my bills.
Sure.
And yeah, it was like a pretty pivotal moment actually in my career when I got to quit my Joe job and move straight to creating content. That was a really big win for me.
Absolutely. Well, and how did it morph from the food blog into a YouTube channel?
It went from the food blog to YouTube mainly because I wanted to be able to practice being on camera. So I enjoyed the scratching the artistic itch that was, you know, creating something online. But I realized I needed to keep my tools sharp as an actor. And I really was getting frustrated with these gatekeepers that were, you know, the casting agents that were telling me when I could and couldn't be on camera. And I realized that I had to take it upon myself to do my own practicing and getting comfortable on camera and trying new things. So I converted the blog into a YouTube channel, and it was called Feeling Peckish. And it was recipes inspired by movies. So very much like how what Binging with Babish does now. Not nearly as good or of the same quality, but we were doing that years and years ago. And I would do a little skit at the beginning, and then I would share a recipe that would be, that you would see in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And out of that came a couple of different projects and partnerships that you worked on. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. Yeah. So we did, several of these recipes inspired by movies. And then we got discovered by a company called Taste Made, which is based out of Los Angeles. And they're a really wonderful food and travel production company. And they found us, and they were this young startup. And back then they had more of the MCN model where they managed YouTube channels. And so they took us under their wing. And of course we were really new to it. So I was happy, you know, to have a partner kind of holding my hand through building a YouTube channel. And as we worked with them, we got to kind of produce more and more original content for them and their platform. And they had a much broader audience. And so we grew in tandem with Taste Made growing as a company. We kind of grew the channel. And I was producing more and more food content for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those MCNs have seemed to be a thing of the past, but they were quite helpful for creators early on. Why do you think that they didn't kind of last?
I think the MCN model was unsustainable because in order to provide that personal care, and I mean Taste Made has evolved away from the MCN model because they're unable to give the right amount of education and mentorship that pays their bills. You know, they would have to have a roster of hundreds of YouTubers in order to justify, you know, being an MCN, but then they can't have that personal touch that they're giving to every one of the creators. And mm-hmm. So I think that model died out relatively quickly.
Yeah. It's so interesting though. They've spawned so many, you know, talented people out of those mm-hmm. MCNs in the early days, you know, like yourself. And now granted, that's giving them a lot of credit. Well, mm-hmm. maybe they don't deserve that much because a lot of it's your own hard work and building, you know, and adjusting. And pivoting. And in fact, you obviously were creating a ton of content around food, but you have since pivoted into other, you know, sketches and skits and a more comedic kind of focus. Has that always been something you wanted to do? Tell us a little bit about that move.
Yes, I definitely always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to make acting-based content and specifically comedy content because I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I enjoyed writing. I liked that YouTube allowed me to wear multiple hats. And so I always knew in the back of my head that I would have to transition the channel or create a new channel. I just wasn't sure what that was going to look like. And I reached a really pivotal fork in the road when I realized that a lot of the opportunities I was getting, you know, via email were coming to me as a food host.
Right.
And none of the opportunities were to be an actor. And that's when I realized, oh shoot, I think I have to make a choice now. I think this is where I have to mm-hmm. decide that either the channel changes or I stop doing food content because it's helped me up to this point, but it's no longer benefiting me in my ultimate goals. So I did have to make a switch to create comedy content and kind of further my acting and writing career in the ultimate direction I wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm. But you kind of had that in the back of your mind, even as you were kind of in the throes of building up the Feeling Peckish YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I actually started integrating comedy skits in throughout as we were doing more and more food content, because I was realizing I was just so deprived in acting and all these characters I wanted to play and all these great sketches that I had ideas for. And then we actually did the YouTube Next Up program. I don't know if you're aware, it's like this great incubator camp for mm-hmm. for up and coming channels that seem to have potential. And it was at that camp that we talked to a couple of the mentors and they were like, you got to do what you love. Like YouTube is a hustle. It's a battle. And if you're not doing exactly what you want to do, there's no way you're going to be able to sustain it. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of that pivotal moment that I decided, okay, from here on in, we're saying goodbye to Feeling Peckish, goodbye to the Food Channel, and we're going to focus entirely on sketch comedy.
How hard was that transition to make, not only in terms of kind of emotionally and mentally, but also just operationally? You have this audience that's coming to you every single week for specific types of content. Mm-hmm. And now you have to shift them or start with a clean slate.
Yeah. Well, for me, initially, it was a breath of fresh air because I really had become burnt out on the food content because just the love for it wasn't there anymore. But we took a major hit as a channel. And I think if I could go back in time, I probably would have recommended that we just start a new channel, because the algorithm doesn't take kindly to changing,
the algorithm,
your style of content. We were penalized big time. I mean, because we were labeled a food channel, and all your associate channels that YouTube likes to connect you with are all food channels. And so, you know, not only did we have the loss of subscribers, I'd say we probably lost, 25% of our subscribers because they're just not interested in the new content. But you're also getting recommended to people who want food content. You know, they didn't sign up for this sketch comedy. So we had really poor watch times and really bad retention. And basically, I would say the channel went dormant for probably an entire year.
Got it. And during that year, though, you were still putting out content. Were you like, how did you adjust?
Well, to be quite honest, I really enjoyed it. Initially, I was a little like, all that work that we had done. But as I started creating sketches, to be quite frank, they weren't good. My initial, they just weren't. I'm not going to pretend like I was an amazing writer right off the bat. But we had this like vacuum to make stuff in, where we didn't really have people watching. We had the abilities and the skills and all the gear, which is a big leg up. Mm-hmm. But I had this playground where I could fail. And I think that was such a beautiful place to try things and challenge myself and challenge my own writing and my acting without feeling the need of chasing the views dragon. I wasn't worried about losing subscribers because I had already lost them all. I already had no interest on this channel. So there was no fear of failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The monkey was off your back. Yeah. You weren't worried about that. It's so interesting to think about that, because if you ask creators now and said, hey, you're going to lose 25% of your subscribers, you're going to see view times go, down the tube. How are you going to react? They would all be incredibly anxious.
Panic.
And, scared. But, flipping the cup and looking at it, half full and saying, well, actually, it gives me the opportunity to test things out, do what I want.
Absolutely. Well, and we weren't even a big enough channel. I'm thankful that we weren't big enough to really rely on any sort of AdSense revenue. So we were already being really, creative and strategic about the income coming into the house. And there were lots of different irons in the fire, so to speak, in terms of projects that I was actively working on. And so to kind of say goodbye to the YouTube channel and allow it to evolve into something else, it was a risk, but it wasn't the financial risk that I think some channels might face.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about, from that point on, you made that decision. The channel kind of was quiet for a year just because you were going through this transitional phase. But tell us a little bit about those inbound emails, right? They went from being a host of cooking. Did they slowly transition? Did they stop completely and then restart into, hey, we'd love you for this role? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, so it took probably 6 months to really refine my voice in terms of a comedy writer. And I've been writing for years and years, and I have many, many horrible films under my belt and horrible pilots. But in terms of writing for sketch comedy on YouTube, it took a little while for me to get my voice. And the same goes for my acting and performance. But once I had things clicked in, I got a manager here in Toronto who's incredibly supportive of both my online work and kind of the more traditional film and TV stream. And so she's actually used my online presence to leverage getting me in casting rooms and getting me booked on different jobs. And now, as an actor, I've got this really incredible portfolio that just lives online, where most actors, they've got a short demo reel. I've got a library of content that my manager has now used to say, oh, Julie can play this character. Here she is here. You know, we've got a 4-minute sketch of it. So it's really, really benefited.
That's really fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It was nice that you were able to do that intentionally, but also have time to experiment. So you didn't have to pivot right away and feel like, oh, I got to make this work in the next month or 2 months or whatever. Otherwise, you know, things are not going to pan out for me.
Yeah.
But when you think about kind of your long-term goals, you have these, you know, being a YouTuber is a profession. Mm-hmm. Now it is a very viable and lucrative way of making money. But you also are pushing on the acting side of things as well in more traditional feature films, TV shows, stuff like mm-hmm. that. So how do you think about your career going forward? You've made this pivot. You have both opportunities. Where do you see things going?
Yeah, I love hearing you say that YouTube is a job because I believe that wholeheartedly. I think that I'm disappointed that it's not respected with the same validity that being a writer on a TV show or a movie is. But I think YouTube will always have a place in my heart, and I hopefully will always create stuff for it because I love the platform. I love how rustic it is. I love how topical it can be. You can do immediately relatable content to the news of the day, which you don't get the privilege of doing that on traditional film and TV. That being said, there is a huge desire of mine to make a TV show and to make several feature films. I have ideas for projects that don't necessarily work on the platform that is YouTube, you know, and bigger productions with bigger budgets. I mean, those are things that I ultimately am very, very excited about making, but they serve a different place in my heart, you know, creatively than YouTube does. And I hopefully will just be able to maintain pursuing both forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's nice too, because one kind of sharpens the other, right?
You're absolutely
continuing to work on, you know, YouTube expands your vocabulary, if you will, in terms of the characters you can play, the roles, the type of writing you can do. And it gives you the opportunity to do TV and movies as well. And like you said, there's a form for everything. And YouTube isn't always the right form for some of your ideas. And I think that's the beautiful thing about creating this type of art, is that you shouldn't necessarily be limited to one or the other. And you actually might find that you do a couple feature films or you do a couple TV shows and it might not be for you, or maybe that's mm-hmm. all you want to do.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, and there's no denying too that a YouTube audience brings a certain amount of clout. You know, I had been making the same quality of content before I had the viral video, but there was zero interest in, you know, from traditional media in me, I would say, minor. Now, you know, with a wonderful audience of incredible people in a community, now there's validity, you know, I'm worth looking at. And so, yeah, while I am excited to pursue more traditional things, I think I will always maintain YouTube because it's just been such a wonderful community for me and a wonderful place to explore and challenge myself.
Absolutely. And we're seeing it in the publishing industry as well. Mm. You know, publishing houses are looking for aspiring authors with large audiences on social platforms. And you're seeing former Vine stars getting picked up for movies and acting in movies, even if they're in small roles, because they bring an audience. They bring people who are going to buy, who are going to stream, who are going to, however they're going to watch the show mm-hmm. or the movie. And so the customer acquisition is one of those pieces, certainly. And then also the validity of that, you know, the validation of the, you know, audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing you kind of glossed over there was the viral video. You did have you've had several videos go viral, but there was one that kind of kicked things off.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So it's a video I made right at the start of the pandemic. And it was right when everybody kind of just got into quarantine. I think all the different countries were trying to figure out how we were going to deal with this. And it's when lockdowns really started. And I wanted to talk about it. I thought that any video that I was going to make, that wasn't about the pandemic was going to feel insensitive, because that's not what was on everybody's mind. The fact of the matter is there was a big thing that I wanted to address, and I felt like I could do it in a fun, lighthearted way. And so I wrote this really, really simple script of me talking to my past self, explaining to my house self just how nuts 2020 got. And it resonated, and people, turns out, really liked it.
Yeah, they loved it. And I think it's really interesting. One of the reasons why I think that, and this is me just, you know, surmising from what I've seen, but one of the reasons why I think people really liked it was because it covered a very tough topic that there is a lot of kind of divisiveness mm-hmm. around, in a lighthearted way, while also acknowledging it's not going to be easy. And it takes a lot of skill to do that. And at this point, you know, it has really gone quite far. But you've also had another one that you did after that as well, where you effectively did an update. And, you know, along the lines of covering a very difficult topic with kind of a deft touch and acknowledging kind of the hardships. Tell us a little bit about that second one as well, because it not only had addressed COVID, but it also addressed the recent issue of George Floyd's death, kind of the long dormant racial issues that have finally risen to the surface in Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. So when everything happened when the protests began, I should say, is when I realized that I needed to do an update. And I felt like I could be sensitive enough in my language to do something that could still remain entertaining, but also be heartfelt. And that was always my goal, is, am I going to make a video that is going to do more good than harm? Like, am I providing entertainment at the expense of anyone, or am I providing entertainment that allows for maybe a deeper learning and for us all to kind of be on the same page? And that's one of the beauties of comedy, and that I think comedy does really well, is you can talk about topics that are really, really heavy, and you can bring in a lightness to them that allows us to all digest them together. It makes it more humanly relatable. And so I knew I had to do a part two, and I wrote it, and then I worked really, really closely with my husband, who's a director, and he works a lot on my videos with me. And we just kind of went through the language, just word by word. And I know it won't seem like much, because of course it's like a funny, happy-go-lucky 4-minute video, but I really wanted every word to be thought out and careful, because I didn't want to alienate anyone. I didn't want to be insensitive. I just wanted to offer up the fact that we are all globally going through something together. And it's a lot to go through together, but we are in fact all in this together. And that was the goal of that video. And once again, I think it was, I think people really related to it. And I think people looked forward to it, because the first one was so successful. It kind of gave a break in the tension that was the pandemic. So, I think the second one served kind of the same purpose.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is just a great illustration of the place that art has in society, right? The ability to comment on things, the ability to honestly just give people a space for reprieve, mm-hmm. to give them a place to come and address a topic that's heavy, but in a way that allows them to relax a little bit and just get a reprieve. And I think that was a great illustration of how to do it. I also really appreciate the fact that you didn't back away from it. There's been a lot of talk about influencers who have backed away from, you know, the responsibility that they have with a platform in addressing these topics.
Yeah. And it is, there is always in the back of your mind, you go, is this my place? And even as a Canadian, I mean, that's a conversation I have with myself, is, can I speak intelligently on this topic that is so, where the epicenter is in another country? And that's right. Not saying that we don't have the exact same issues up here in Canada, but Am I the best? Am I the authority on this to be able to talk about it? And I think that one thing I wanted to come across with that video is that I'm not the authority by any means, but I am moved by this, and I want to share how it has affected me. And that's also kind of the beauty of, you know, the format of me talking to myself, because you can say a lot of things to yourself without getting into any sort of trouble. You know, you're subconscious. It's while you're grappling with a topic. And I think that people can really relate to that. You can be imperfect in that situation.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And so just a wonderful, you know, the going viral and then following up with such a great video was really amazing. But I think one of the things that people forget about going viral, or they misunderstand about going viral, is they think, oh, you put out one thing and you go viral and that's it, you're mm-hmm. big. But I don't know if that's necessarily the case. What are your perspectives on that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that, yeah, you can have a video that totally pops off, but if you don't have a catalog of really great similar content behind it, or have a plan for lots of similar great content in the future, I just don't see it lasting. To give kind of a smaller, more minor example, back when I was doing more of the food stuff and early in the sketch comedy days, I did a video that got views I'd never seen before, 500,000 views, you know. And we had a huge bump of subscribers. And over the next 3 or 4 weeks, we just lost all of them because I had no intention of repeating that video. It was a bit of an anomaly. I had no other videos like it on my channel. And then I had no plan to do more. So they just all disappeared. Whereas in this instance, it was a bit of a blessing because we had this one video that people really, really resonated with, that they liked, that was entertaining. And then we had this wonderful library of content of the same quality, of the same type of humor mm-hmm. that nobody had seen before. So it was really cool right. to just watch. I mean, there's old videos there from years back, you know, that got a 300% bump in views, you know, just because people are going back to find it.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think you hit the nail. You need to have that deep content of library because you need to show people that, hey, you know, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. And also when you think about it, your first pandemic video is now over 10, 11 million views. And you think about the number of people who see it. Not everybody's going to subscribe, just that's the way it is. But if there are going to be enough people who go and say, oh, she does this. Oh, this is my type of humor. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's got like 40 videos for me to go down a rabbit hole on. They're going to hit that subscribe button because they know you're coming out every week because you say it in every video. And so it's this constant repetition and the ability for someone to come to your page and say, oh, this is, you know, a deep place where I can come and find all sorts of great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And so when you think about building your audience, because you guys have, you've now gone from, what was your subscriber count before the viral video?
In January, I was sitting at 50,000 subscribers.
And you're just on the precipice of 500, right?
I'm on the brink. I can't even, it's so surreal to even hear you say that. I don't believe it.
That is unbelievable. And so how has that changed your perspective? I mean, we talked earlier about YouTube content, monetizing, you quitting your job. You called it a Joe job?
Joe job. Yeah. That's what us industry people call it.
Okay. Got it. And I'm assuming that just means your regular Joe job.
Yeah, just a regular job.
Okay. Got it. So that was a big moment for you, but now your audience, your regular audience has been 10X'd, right? So how has your thought process around the monetization side of things, your ability to support yourself by not having a Joe job, changed?
I mean, well, I'm super famous now, so you know. I just I get recognized in the street with my mask on. So no, I've actually legitimately never been recognized. It's interesting. I mean, I'm so thankful that I've had the path that I have because there's no part of me that wants to chase that views dragon, you know, that's running after the views. So my perspective on where we are now, I am so grateful. And again, it is very surreal and it doesn't feel real at all, but I'm still going to make what I was always making because I didn't make one video and then have to keep maintaining it. I've just always made different things and always challenged. And I had that really great blessing of a year where nobody watched my stuff, but I still hustled on a weekly basis while working lots of other jobs to make videos. And so that really built a foundation in me of what my voice is as a creator. And I'm so thankful that that's so cemented in me because I continue to maintain that. And can continue to maintain that while I still have more eyeballs.
You were making these videos when nobody's watching, and you're going to continue making them now that the whole world is watching.
Yeah, basically.
That's great. No, and going back to what you said earlier, that has to be the ethos behind these platforms, that or the creatives on these platforms, right? Like you pivoted because you just didn't have the same fire in you to create the food content that you did these sketches. And you said, all right, this is what I want to do with my career. And it's organic. It's real. It's not something that you have to paint on every single day. It's what you really want to be doing.
I agree. Well, and YouTube is a crazy hustle, especially if you're committed to weekly videos. So if you're not loving them.
Yeah, walk us through that process. Yeah, walk us through that. Just give people a taste because, you know, Instagram is one thing, right? You know, taking photos. My wife is an influencer. I take all of her photos and I have done that for a long time. You know, and I know what the process looks like, and it's a lot to produce a really well done photo shoot. And we've spent, you know, 8 years perfecting the craft and we're good at it now, but video is a whole different beast. So tell us about a weekly process.
Okay. I feel like this is going to be embarrassing because I am so rigorous, but I've had years and I've learned. So I have a really, really clear weekly schedule. And that's the only way that I can keep my sanity, because on top of making a weekly video, I probably have 3 or 4 auditions a week. I'll have other projects that I'm working on. I'll be writing a pilot, whatever it is. So on Mondays is my creative time. I take 2 to 3 hours and I try to be as creative as possible. I'll come up with ideas. I'll come up with sketches. That's all I give myself. So that's as much time as that's all I give myself. So I take full advantage of those 3 hours a week. And then from there, I shoot on probably Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Usually I'll work a week in advance so that if I need other actors or if I need to produce anything, or if I'm just like not in love with the script and I'm like, this needs rewrites or I need to write something brand new, I'll give myself time to do that. And then it's editing. And I spend, on each video, I probably spend 6 to 8 hours just editing and finalizing things and making sure I love it and getting it uploaded and putting captions on it. And so it's a big hustle. I would say the most challenging part that maybe people don't necessarily recognize or they do is the actual coming up with ideas, because that has to happen so organically and you cannot force it. And so if you don't give yourself time to just sit and think and have a coffee and look out the window and think of crazy situations, you're just never going to have a good video. Like you need that time, and that time is so precious to me every week that I like really honor it when I do get it.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. It's also interesting to think about from the perspective of exploring different parts of your brain. Right, you give yourself 2 to 3 hours every week just to sit and think, and you're exploring kind of the far reaches of your brain. A lot of people, regular Joes who have Joe jobs, probably don't do that, you know? And so I would imagine you learn a lot about yourself. You have some ideas. You're like, whoa, no, that's, you know, that's not going to make the, you know, the film. And tell us a little bit about the ability to kind of explore your own mind.
Yeah, I mean, I would say years ago, I would probably look at that and say, oh, you're not working. Like if you're not moving, you're not working. If you're not actively putting words on paper, you're not working. But in my experience of, you know, of being a writer and creating things, that's your most vital time. So yeah, respecting that sometimes you just have to sit and you have to think, and you think about different topics, stuff that's affecting you, stuff that's affecting the planet, your family, your friends, stuff that's really silly. And then you start diving into, what's my perspective on this thing? You know, why is this important? Why? And I try to avoid thinking, is this relatable to a broad audience? Because I've come to learn that if it really relates to me, unless I'm talking about being a sketch comedy YouTuber, but if it's a thing in my life that really relates to me, odds are it's going to relate to somebody else. So I try not to focus on that. And instead I try to think about what's the angle in on this issue? What perspective can I get from it? Is there a moral I can learn from it? Or is it just silly? Is it just a silly thing that happens that I want to explore and film something about?
No, that's incredible. And Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. You know, at this point, you've created enough videos, you know that, hey, if I can relate to it, other people can relate to it. But also, mm-hmm. people just find my perspective interesting and funny. But tell us a little bit about the monetization, getting away from kind of the rigors of actually creating a video a week, which is an incredible lift. Tell us a little bit about the monetization side of things, because you use Patreon, you use YouTube, you've done sponsored Instagram posts. Tell us a little bit mm-hmm. about, you know, that side of it that allows you not to have the regular Joe job and allows you to go out and do auditions and pursue the things that you want to pursue.
Yeah, I think the key is diversifying your income. That way you're not reliant on any sort of one pillar for, you know, covering your rent and making sure that all your basic needs are met. So we do have a Patreon. I have offered merch before. I do sponsored posts. And then, you know, there's AdSense. But again, I'm not solely reliant on any one pillar. And then additionally, I do acting work, and I work in commercials, and my husband has his different projects. And so I think in order to maintain longevity as a creator, you need to be prepared to have many, many different monetization sources. That's mm-hmm. that's the way, not only to have security, but just peace of mind. Because once again, just going back to the note of on creativity, I don't want my creativity to be under pressure. I don't want to be in a position where I'm like, I need this much money from AdSense this month, and if I don't get it, our lights are going off, so I've got to create the next viral video. I don't want to feel like I'm under that sort of pressure. Instead, I want to be in a place where I can play and make something that might fail once again on YouTube, mm-hmm. like many have, so that I can then get better, you know, so I can, right. so the art doesn't have to be sacrificed in order to pay for my basic necessities.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And the other thing that I think it's important to note is you were doing this prior to 10Xing your audience in 6 months.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's important for people to understand. I also think it's important people understand that you had a Joe job for a long time because mm-hmm. that was one of your diversification strategies, right? And so everybody has a different time, you know, when they're ready to kind of, you know, quit their Joe job, as you put it. Mm-hmm. But it's different for everybody. It's not the same. Everybody's path is different, but the strategy is very similar. Have that diversification. Absolutely. And you don't need 500,000 subscribers on YouTube to be able to do it.
No, you're absolutely right. And there's no, I mean, when I say I quit my Joe job, that's like a common phrase that we use in Toronto in the acting industry to talk about. You know, it feels like you finally have validity as an actor, as an artist. But I go back to, there was nothing wrong with having a Joe job, because especially working as a bartender, it allowed me to do this. And I really enjoyed that work. And so while I you're right, I did hit, you know, a fork in the road, and I did have to, you know, move on, make that wonderful step to financing myself based on my own artistic endeavors. I really enjoyed that job, and that job had great value to me. And I don't think it, you know, to anyone listening, if you yourself are a creator, you'll quit your Joe job when it's time, but there's nothing wrong with having one, you know, there's nothing wrong with
time.
And if it's exactly, if it's time,
because we've had creators on here who are lawyers and creators, and they said, yeah. You know, I'm never going to quit my job as a lawyer because it allows me to do kind of some analytical work that I wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And I love that. I also yeah. love creating. I'm never going to not do both. Some people see it as, hey, listen, I always have to have a backup income stream, even if mm-hmm. the, you know, the influencer thing doesn't work out. There are a whole variety of reasons why people will, you know, build the lives that they want to build. The nice thing is there is no one paradigm. You can create kind of the situation that you want to create yourself. And that's the beauty of these platforms.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Total freedom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about kind of your goals for the next 5 to 10 years. Let's look forward. You know, what is it, you know, 5 years out, you look back in the rearview mirror and say, that lined up perfectly. What is that?
Oh my goodness. I'm one of those people who's a little bit scared to dream that far in advance because I don't know, I'm worried I'm going to jinx it or something, but I mean, in a dream world, 5 years down the road, I'd love to just be spending all my time creating. I want to make TV shows. I want to make feature films. There's so many projects that I've created and I have seeds of ideas of that I've just never had the means to create. Whereas now, you know, having, you know, the viral videos and having a much larger audience, it feels like a door has swung open in terms of access to production companies and access to television networks. And so I want to capitalize on that and take all of those early Julie ideas and dreams and kind of flesh them out and make them realities.
That is awesome. And I think, you know, it's interesting. Not only do you have access to a lot more now with a larger audience, but in terms of production, but you also have access to other talented folks, people who are looking to collaborate. Sure. Other ideas are going to spawn. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how all that snowballs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. It's strange that it's happened in quarantine because I'll be honest, my life feels exactly the same as before. It's just the numbers are different and I have a new plaque. But other than that, everything's the same. It's probably the best for my ego, to be quite honest. I'm just keeping it centered.
Right. Yeah. Well, you Canadians have that reputation that precedes you. So, you know, there probably wouldn't be a problem otherwise. But let's also dive into some of your favorites. We're going to do a quick kind of lightning round of your favorites so far. So let's go outside of your viral video. What's your favorite sketch that you have on your YouTube channel right now?
Okay, my favorite sketch is one called Trying to Remember the Name of the Guy from Lion King. And I think hardly anybody has seen it, but I'll be honest, I know it sounds really narcissistic, but every time I watch it, I laugh. I just think it's the funniest thing. Yeah. You know what's crazy? Sorry, I know we're in a lightning round, but I was going to say...
No, it's not really a lightning round.
Okay. I should say I almost didn't post that first viral video. We made it and I wrote it and I showed it to my husband. He was like, "Yeah, it's kind of funny." Because we had been saying those jokes for so long that they were really stale. And then I edited it and I sent it to my friend and I was like, "I don't think I'm going to post. I'm just going to skip it. I'm going to skip this week." And she watched it and she was like, "I don't think you should skip it. I think it's okay." And so legitimately, I exported it. I uploaded it. I was like, "Ugh, I'm so embarrassed." I posted it. And then I was like, I have to work out. I have to leave the house because I just don't want the comments being like, "Ugh, Julie, your content has gone down. What are you doing?" So I worked out for an hour and I go to check my YouTube and the numbers were insane. Anyway, so there you go. So obviously my own taste for my videos is not really good because my favorite video is one of the least viewed. And one of my least favorite videos is the one that has brought on all the success. So
I think that's great. I think that's also, you never know. And that's why experimentation is so important.
Oh my gosh, totally. Well, and it's all, I tell people, it's just drops in the bucket. You know, you never know which one is going to overflow the bucket. You just got to keep working and putting the drops in there.
That's great. Yeah. So favorite character. So sketch aside, favorite character to play.
I like playing the one girl who's trying to give away free cruises. That's her main job.
You tack on that Southern accent and go to work.
Oh, I love it because she's got this naivety and this like beautiful authenticity of just genuinely wanting to give away these free cruises and she just can't and it breaks her heart.
That's great. That's a really good series of videos. this is probably a silly question, but favorite social platform?
Quibi. No, I'm just kidding. It's YouTube.
I thought you were serious for a second. Obviously YouTube. What about your favorite kind of more traditional acting role so far? TV, movie, commercial?
I got to do a day on What We Do in the Shadows. And I had a very small, very, very small part. I had one line, but it was one of the most incredible days on set. The Jemaine Clement, who is half of the Flight of the Conchords, he was there and he was doing some directing and the costumes were incredible. And just like the artistry of these acts, like they were so funny. I can't even tell you. And I pride myself on not breaking like not laughing during a scene and I couldn't keep it together. And I was like basically a glorified extra and I was laughing because they were so good. It was such a fun day.
Now in a situation like that, are you nervous because you're like, I am an extra, I am laughing. You're not an extra, but you're a glorified extra, as you put it.
Yeah.
Like, are you like, I can't be breaking?
Totally. Oh my God. Yeah. Especially because I was like, the scene isn't even about me. You know, like
right.
The camera's not on me. I could ruin this amazing right. performance. I just felt like such an idiot. But then, you know, I wasn't the only one laughing. And he proceeded yeah. to do, you know, three or four more improvs that just got better and better and better. And then everyone was laughing. And I was like, oh, this must be just what it's like to work on this show because they're so okay. funny. They're such great actors. Yeah, I felt like less bad.
Yeah, it's like that the CSI video where the dead person in the pool like keeps trying to that you did that yeah. Like they keep trying to like overact despite the fact that they are literally face down in a pool.
Oh my gosh. I have been around those actors on sets before where I had to be like, it's not about us. Like, I don't think you should talk right now because you technically don't have a line. And also the camera's not on us. It like
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's incredible. All right. What's your dream role?
My dream role, I don't have a character specifically. My dream role would be to be in a movie where I play a character that needs like 3 to 6 months of training beforehand. So whatever that means, whether it's like Million Dollar Baby, where I have to like learn how to be a great boxer, or like Charlize Theron in Killer Blonde and she had to do all that fight choreography. Like that's my dream. Something that I have to like really train beforehand, I think would be just killer.
And what about that gets you excited?
I don't know. I love the idea of just fully immersing myself into a character so much so that I learn a new skill and learn new gestures and kind of take on a different body type. And I like the idea of just like morphing into a different human. I think that would be really a really fun, exciting challenge, and also like very, like a wonderful addition to a life experience, you know, to say, I trained to be a professional boxer for 6 months of my life so I could make this movie. I mean, when else would you ever do that?
Right. Yeah. No, that would be incredible. Yeah. Do you have a skill you'd like to learn in that 3 to 6 month period?
I'd like to learn better fight choreography. I'd like to learn to be a good fighter. I think that would be cool. And make lots of stunts. Because mm-hmm. those stunt people, they're insane. They're just, yeah. what they're capable of doing is unreal. I want to learn that.
Yeah. Nice. All right. You've got a last question on this topic. You have unlimited budget. What are you creating?
I have unlimited budget. I'm going to make a movie. I wrote the short film for it. It's a movie that takes place in Winnipeg. It's an original of mine. It's a feature film. And it's all about the Canadian invasion of music that happened in the 1960s. It's a big passion of mine to make Canadiana mainstream. And that's one of the reasons why I really, in my YouTube channel and all my social media, I really try to get across the fact that I'm Canadian, because we have so many wonderful Canadian actors and comedians who have left our great country because they had to, because they really weren't jobs here, but have never really brought the content or the productions back to kind of tell our stories. And so it's a dream of mine to tell Canadian stories that are authentically Canadian, but that are on a relatable level, that are universal and are exciting to the world of people.
That's awesome. And I think that's such a great mission to have. And the Canadian side certainly comes out. I think that's a really noble goal to have. And you've already written this, or you've written the short version?
I've written the short film for it, and we're in the process of trying to get it made. Obviously not this summer, but next summer, yeah. And it will film in Winnipeg. And then the hope is to then take that and try to get some financing for the feature film.
Awesome. Well, if our audience can help on that, let us know. how can people support this endeavor? Because I think we need a little more of that in our lives.
No kidding. Well, we'll see. I'm hoping that once we're through, or once we've adapted to whatever this current pandemic is, we'll make it out the other side, and I'll be able to make it and share it with the world, and then hopefully take the steps from there to make the feature happen.
So stay tuned, folks.
Stay tuned.
To close things out, what advice would you have for aspiring actors who are looking to improve their chances of landing roles, getting those callbacks? What would you tell them?
Well, good on you for doing it. Good on you for being an actor in the first place, because it is painful and heartbreaking to audition, to stand in front of people and have them basically tell you you're not good enough on a daily basis. So already a big pat on the back for doing that. I think the main advice I would say is do what you can that's in your own control to stay good at your craft, to keep your tools sharp. So get in front of a camera and practice your accents, practice your characters, practice your perspective on different scenes. Pull scenes from the internet. That's one thing I used to do before we started the YouTube channel, is I would pull scenes from Newsroom and West Wing and Suits and shows that were filming at the time. And I would just go through them and memorize them and make choices. And then I would film myself and, you know, in front of a camera. And I think also as an actor, it's important to get comfortable seeing yourself on camera, because I used to do this really weird thing with my eye that I used to blink it in a really weird way and I had no idea. And that was a total crutch that I used. And that's one thing that I found over time. And I was able to kind of evolve it out of my body. So I think practice what you can. Obviously you're auditioning and you can't practice being on set, but take control of what you can, because so much is in everybody else's control.
And what about for content creators who feel like they're getting pulled in multiple directions or have multiple loves when it comes to creating content? What would you say to them?
Oh, geez, that's a tougher question. I guess it depends with what your ultimate end goals are. I mean, if you're like me or your goals are kind of parallel to mine, where you do have an end goal that you're pursuing, are the steps that you're taking right now taking you in that direction? So if I look back to, you know, me a couple of years ago in the food content, you know, that served me to a point. But then I had to leave it when it didn't serve me anymore. And so while I still do love food and I love cooking and I'm still crazy passionate about it, that gets to remain a hobby. And so that doesn't live in my YouTube space right now, because I've decided and deemed that space for my ultimate career goals. And so I think if you have something pulling yourself in multiple directions, do you have a place where you see yourself in 5 years, and is what you are currently doing serving that? And if it's not, I would maybe encourage you to specify a little bit and maybe streamline what you're currently doing to help you achieve those end goals.
No, that's great. Well, Julie, thanks so much for joining us today in Influencer Business. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Oh, this has been fun. Thanks so much.
A big thank you to Julie Noelke for joining us today in Influencer Business. If you're not already doing so, make sure you follow her. Her Instagram handle is Julie Noelke. That's JulieNoelke. And on YouTube, it's Julie Noelke. That's the name of her channel. Two quick things I wanted to mention before I let you go. First, I want to talk about transitions. As Julie mentioned, she transitioned from having a food blog and a food channel into this comedic sketch channel. And she saw a massive decrease in followers. She saw terrible engagement. But she said while it was kind of scary, it was also quite liberating, because she wasn't worried about the numbers. She knew she was making a transition, and it opened up her creativity. It allowed her to do things that she'd always wanted to do. So if there is a transition that you're dreading, keep that in mind. It can often be liberating. The second thing I wanted to mention is going viral is not enough. We talked about it. Julie actually went viral previously, but it didn't stick because she didn't have the same library of content that she does now, or the consistency of content that she does now. But now that she went viral and she has that deep library of content, people stick around. So don't just wait around to go viral. Don't think that there's going to be one video that makes you as an artist or a content creator or an influencer. It's that deep library of content and that expertise that you develop over time that will really carry you forward if a piece of content hits. So Keep that in mind. As always, a big shout out to Pete Crimi and the team over at Sound Lounge, who make us sound much better over the air than we do in person. A big thank you to Shop Style Collective for sponsoring this podcast. And if you made it this far, you must have loved something. So please take a minute, give us that 5-star rating, leave us that glowing review. We certainly do appreciate it, and it always helps. With that, I'm your host, Rich Scutellari. Thanks so much for joining us today on Influencer Business, and we'll see you next time.